Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, you came and you gave without taking, but I sent you away. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Volkelbaum.
I'm Joe McCormick.
And we are taking a break from our discussion about superhero movies, true story, to have a podcast about really kind of broadcasting our lives and the fact that this is kind of a thing and it has been a thing for a while.
Yeah, in our last podcast, we talked about surveillance,
yes.
About how surveillance has been escalating in a very rapid way for the past few decades. And how that trend is probably going to continue, how we should feel about it, and what it's going to mean. But we should keep in mind that a lot of the recording that's going on is not some government or even some business with a CCTV camera capturing you without you knowing.
Yeah.
It's your buddy with the smartphone.
Or it's you with a webcam.
Or your smartphone or your Google Glass.
Yeah, we call this a surveillance. As opposed to surveillance.
Right.
It's not a joke.
It's absolutely true.
Surveillance. It is the recording of an activity by someone who is actually participating in said activity.
I am learning words.
This is great.
This is actually huge.
Yeah.
I mean, how many photos do people upload to Facebook every day?
It's like for a month, I think it's 300 million.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot of photos. And so then there's all the video. There's 72 hours of video uploaded to YouTube every minute, and according to the last update from YouTube, which was quite a while ago.
It was a couple years ago, wasn't it?
No, it was several months ago, because a couple years ago they said it was 48
hours.
Right, you're right.
But still, it's probably more since then.
Oh, sure. I bet we're creeping up to the 100 hours per minute, 100 hours worth of video per minute passing pretty soon.
Yeah,
so,
way more than any one human person could possibly consume. It's like 12 years of footage per day.
It's accumulating so quickly. There is no way for you to be able to catch up. You would never – just there's not enough hours unless you find some way to, one, make everybody stop, and, two, achieve – if not immortality, incredible longevity for you to be able to go through and watch everything that's been on YouTube. And a lot of that is stuff that people have shot of themselves that they want to share. They're either sharing their opinion about something, or they're creating an online journal that's in video form, or a vlog, as a lot of people like to call it, unless you're Felicia Day, in which case you call it a flog.
even outside of that, there's Twitter updates, there's Facebook updates, all of this text that is going into this online giant world diary.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
I think our last podcast maybe got a little bit darker than we meant it to.
Well, we had the superhero discussion that we really need to get to.
Right. Okay, but what we should have remembered is that there's this irony, you know, like we want to be recorded. People are like, oh, my privacy,
yeah.
You know, and that's real. I'm not saying like the need for privacy doesn't exist, but at the same time, we have this, not all of us, most people have this irresistible urge to get recorded and make a mark.
To share.
Yeah.
I mean, a great deal of human interaction is all in the sharing of stories. Those stories may not be formal stories that have a beginning, middle, and end, and, you know, a narrative structure that you could, you know, tear apart in a literature class, but they are stories. It could be a story of what happened to you that morning. It could be something that reminds you of something else you had seen, but, you know, or it could just be taking events and then framing it in such a way where it does form a narrative, whereas someone who is independently observing that may just see a sequence of events that doesn't have any particular connection, but you, as because of your experience, you can create that connection and make it even more compelling. And then you have the desire, hey, I just realized these connections between these seemingly disconnected events. I have to share this with everybody because it's just cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, people have been turning their lives into narratives for hundreds of years, I guess even thousands, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Well,
how long have people been making diaries?
Well, I mean, I would say cave paintings are probably technically sort of diary-tacular. Yeah. That's,
Grog eaten by mammoth today. Good day for Ugg. Ugg was fighting Grog for woman. That's typical journal entry. That not,
the
not
story a, of Ugg by an, Jonathan Strickland.
Not on a cave wall. That was actually novel. That was on my live journal. That was something I wrote 3 years ago, actually.
And an interesting historical point is that back before the late 19th century, really back before the 20th century period, diaries were a lot less personal. It wasn't really until Freudian psychology, the popularization of the novel, and the profession of journalism that we really started to have this concrete sense of a personal identity and a personal self that deserved the kind of attention that we give it through these diaries. But before, people would get together, friends and family would get together and read each other's diaries as a way of sharing what was going on in their lives, which is kind of unheard of these days. I mean, diaries are supposed to be this very private, very personal thing right up until you start putting it on Twitter or Live Journal or et cetera.
Raise your hand if you or a sibling had one of those diaries with a little lock on it. And those things are so easy to pry apart. But
Joe's been burned before. That's what we're trying to say.
All you need is a crowbar. And a
little bit of elbow grease and the desire to see it done. So there is this sort of, for a lot of people, this desire to record and to share their observations, the things that happened to them, really their life story. And technology has given us more tools to do that now than we've ever had access to before, to the point where we're getting closer and closer to a time when we could have our entire lives documented from birth to death.
Yeah. Did people ever try to do this just in writing, like a standard diary? How close could you get?
The answer is yes. There are several people. It's called a obsessive diary writing or obsessive diarists. And there's one terrific example of a Reverend Robert Shields, who was a reverend and teacher in Washington State, wrote 3,000 to 6,000 words per day for over 20 years, a total of 37.5 million words.
Whoa.
Over the course of his lifetime. He had 6 typewriters arranged in a horseshoe around a swivel chair and would just sit down and circulate amongst the typewriters until they ran out of ribbon.
Wow.
And this was the,
did he write about?
He was recording things in 5-minute increments. There was a terrific story in NPR in 1994 about it. And, things like 1220 to 1225, I stripped my thermals. I always do that. 1230 to 1250, I ate leftover salmon, Alaska red salmon by Bumblebee, about 7 ounces, drank 10 ounces of orange juice while I read the Oxford Dictionary of Quotations. I can keep going. It's spectacular.
The fact that he always does that, why does he, did he only report it once or did he report it every day?
Every day.
Do you know, now here's the question though, do you know if he did this intentionally for public consumption or was he doing it just for his own reasons?
He was doing it for his own private reasons. He was born in 1918. His father happened to be a speed typing champion who could type the Gettysburg Address over and over at 222 words per minute.
That break in question.
Pretty fast.
QWERTY keyboard or Dvorak or what?
I'm guessing it has to be QWERTY if you're talking 1918. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, I do not have personal data on that.
To be fair, there were other keyboards early on in the typewriter. It's just the QWERTY one is the one that ended up catching on.
Right.
I'll look into it and get back to you.
I'm sorry.
Yes. He started a diary at the age of 17, but gave it up, lost interest in it. And then when he was, I guess what, in his 50s or 60s at some point, he started this this obsessive diary. He said that he didn't know why he was doing it. He just did, and he just had to, and that the thought of stopping it would be like turning off his life.
Yeah, so I don't know if y'all have ever kept a journal or a diary, but it's really interesting the way that writing down your experiences can help give them a sense of meaning. What was before just something that happened to you takes on a kind of symbolic or narrative significance when you put it to words.
Sure.
And historically speaking, even very mundane accounts like these could be very interesting. You know, I mean they're pretty boring to read them right now, but in 200 years and 400 years, that material is gold because we have so little information about what was going on at that time aside from these written diaries.
Oh, yeah, that's totally true. I mean, if we just had access to a few totally mundane records of daily life from, say, ancient Sumeria, I mean, how fascinating would that be now?
Right. Especially people that were involved in large world-changing events and in wars and politics and in spectacular events and disasters.
I'm just thinking, it's been a quiet week in ancient Sumer, my homeland. where all the
men
are.
Is it Sumer or Sumeria?
It'd be Sumeria, but I'm going with the Prey Home Companion approach.
Oh, I see.
It's a Garrison Keillor thing.
No, yeah, I get it.
Okay.
Or,
nice.
Or would it be, you know, just someone sitting there like this guy, just going like I took some temperature readings across my house over the course of today. Would you like to hear all of them?
the paper answers yes.
And like I said, we've developed technology now that really makes this even easier.
Yeah. One thing that occurred to me, and I'm sure there are people who are maybe art philosophers or somebody who've commented on this, but it seems to me that by recording something, you kind of imbue it with a significance in the same way that you did by putting it to words.
Sure.
By writing down your experiences, there's something magic that happens there. And it's similar when you take a picture or record it. Something
similar. Or even just live streaming, where you're not recording it, but you know someone else is watching, which, you know, I'm not one of those people. I don't have a camera on me all the time that's streaming my mundane activities out to the internet. But as an actor, as someone who gets up on stage and performs in front of audiences, live audiences, I mean, part of the reason why I do that, and I'm not saying this is for all actors, but for my own personal reasons, is that there's this sense of validation that comes from someone
from being watched.
Yeah, yeah. Being reacting to something that you are doing and knowing that that reaction is affecting someone gives you that sort of sense of satisfaction and validation. I suspect that some of the people who are live casting get a similar kind of sense of validation from that.
So these days, what does life casting involve?
Well, before we get into what it involves, we need to kind of talk about the beginning of what life casting was.
Where did this come from, and how did people get to doing this?
I would argue that it originally sort of got a shot in the arm back in 1973.
Oh, wow.
So this is pre-web, obviously, mm-hmm. by a couple of decades. 1973, that's when PBS premiered a show called An American Family. And An American Family was a precursor to reality television. It followed the...
on PBS, no less.
On PBS. And it followed the life of an American family. And cameras were everywhere. And it was... there was some criticism that it wasn't a perfectly natural kind of setting, which is the case whenever I think you put cameras in it.
Sure.
I mean, it's starting to get to the point where cameras everywhere is natural. So I would argue that we're getting to a point where you could do a reality television show where the fact that cameras are there is not actually making it artificial. Now, if you have a big crew there who's standing there behind the cameras and monitors and saying, that argument was great, but we missed the end. Could you do the same argument again? That's not so natural. But anyway,
there'd also still be a difference, I think, between people who know they're being recorded and maybe a few people are watching versus people who know they're being recorded and they know a million people.
Right. If you know that you're doing it for an audience, then you're going to behave differently than you would otherwise.
Really depends on what kind of psychopath you are, I think, because the kind of psychopath I am, I don't change if it's one person watching or 1 million. I'm still as goofy.
You're my kind of psychopath.
That's why you're an
Jonathan.
Actor.
That's why I'm an actor. And then there were other movies that came out that, like Real Life, which was a comedy that was spoofing this sort of stuff. I wanted to talk about one of my favorite movies of all time, which also kind of ties into this idea of reality show and turning your life into a type of entertainment for other people. That film would be Shock Treatment, which is the spiritual sequel to Rocky Horror Picture Show. It involves several of the characters. Brad and Janet are the two main characters in Shock Treatment. Interesting little side note, there's only one actor in both Rocky Horror and Shock Treatment who is playing the same character.
Richard O'Brien.
No. Richard O'Brien is in both movies, but he's not playing the same character. He's Riff Raff in Rocky Horror, and he's McKinley in Shock Treatment. No, the only actor who plays the same character, I don't even know the actor's name, I know the character's name, is Ralph Hapshatt, who in Rocky Horror is the guy who's getting married at the very beginning of the movie. Brad and Janet are going to a wedding,
right,
and the wedding
it's
is between
wedding.
Betty Monroe and Ralph Hapshatt. And the actor who played Ralph is the same guy in both movies, and he plays Ralph.
And somehow they got it all on film.
Yeah, well, the thing about Shock Treatment is that it all takes place in Denton, and Denton is a town that's just a giant television studio. And okay. So there's a studio audience that's watching everything that happens. And so the lives of Brad and Janet as they play out in the movie are being observed by a live studio audience that's reacting to the stuff that's going on during the course of the film. So it's this kind of idea. And again, this is before any real reality shows had come out besides the PBS experiment that had come out in 73. And this is the kind of stuff that started to get people into thinking, hey, how could we, you know, use this and make a entertainment out of it? Meanwhile, once we get into the 90s, you get into the rise of the internet and the World Wide Web. Now, the internet had been around for a while, but the World Wide Web is what made it really accessible to the average person. On top of that, we started seeing things like digital cameras. And when digital cameras became more and more common, and then we could get into the point where we had webcams that could take a picture every, you know, minute or 3 minutes or whatever, and then upload it, because back then the broadband speeds were such that unless you were at a university and had a dedicated line, you didn't really have the speed, the throughput necessary to upload digital streaming video.
No one would have had the speed to download it either.
Yeah,
to really watch
it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the earliest live casting was really just a bunch of webcams that were positioned around various people's homes that would take a photo every few minutes and then upload it. And so you would go to the person's website and then refresh the page, or the page itself would refresh every few minutes and give you an updated view of what had happened in the in that person's home. Now, this kind of stuff was sort of mentioned in a novel that was written by a pretty famous science fiction author, William Gibson. Mm-hmm. Neuromancer fame. So Gibson had talked about a concept called God's Little Toys. And he took that actually from something that a friend of William S. Burroughs said about a reel-to-reel tape machine. The idea that this is God's Little Toys, it's something that you could record thoughts in and play back whenever you wanted. But in his novel, All Tomorrow's Parties, God's Little Toys were these blimps that could follow a person around and stream everything so that it was constantly broadcasting that person's life and became a record of that person's life as they moved around. So that kind of idea filtered into reality once we get into the 90s and we start with these webcams. Some of the people who did this first, this idea of live casting, of broadcasting their lives, include Jennifer Ringley, who started Jenny Cam. So Jenny Cam went from about 1996 to 2004, and she had cameras up and would was uploading pictures of her life every single day. She did her best to have it running all the time. Steve Mann was another early live caster. And then by 1999, so 94 and 96 is when we start seeing live casting get started. 99, that's when it really started to hit the public consciousness, this idea of people's lives being broadcast for entertainment, because that is when in the Netherlands a television show called Big Brother hit the air.
Yeah.
And Big Brother, you know, it was all about throwing people together. It's kind of like Real World that MTV had done in a way, but it was throwing a bunch of people together and seeing what happens. Kind of like just starting an ant farm, but with people, and then shaking it really good just before the cameras start rolling.
And picking really controversial ants that they knew would fight.
Exactly. Yeah.
And in a little bit more of a contained area than in the real world.
Right. And there are people out there who still do quite a bit of streaming. Some of them are live casting with wearable computers or wearable cameras, where it's more about capturing their point of view as opposed to the camera being turned back on themselves. It's more about them capturing everything that's happening to them from their perspective.
Which is the concept of Google Glass.
Well, yeah. That's one thing Google Glass is capable of doing, yeah.
And if I can interject, I think that's sort of the future trend. I think that's where this is going. It's not so much turning the camera on yourself for the
I see it as sort of a recording from your point of view. I think you're going to have both, because I think that vlogging is still very much a thing. There are people who feel that they have something very specific to say about various topics, and so they want to turn that camera back on themselves and record themselves saying, you know, why we should leave Britney alone or whatever, mm-hmm. right? And then there are going to be the other folks who are thinking, I just want the world to kind of see what it's like to go through life in my shoes. So I think we're going to get both types still. I don't see one dominating over the other. I do see that the perspective stuff is going to jump in popularity simply because the technology is going to make it easier to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'd also like to make a very important distinction between the future of live casting, people taping everything that happens and broadcasting it, versus just plain recording.
Just personal, yeah. for personal use.
I mean, you said that Shields, the diarist, like he didn't necessarily plan to publish this, right?
Oh, right. In fact, and let me scroll to find
or maybe
this
he actually
factoid.
We know he didn't.
He donated all of his diaries to Washington State University in 1999. This was posthumously, and under the agreement that it would not be read or subjected to a word count for 50 years.
Wow.
Huh.
But, I mean, well, but that's interesting. I mean, so I think that tells us something that we sort of knew already, is that there's clearly some personal value that people could get out of recording their experiences even without broadcasting them out to the world. And those seem like two very different ways of approaching recording one's life.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And there's been a whole bunch of scientific research lately about in health tracking and fitness tracking, just making yourself aware of your habits and aware of what you're doing. In psychology as well, people who are working through issues and keep a diary about it end up having much better, or maybe significantly better at any rate, results at the end.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. The idea that it's... I mean, we talk about this a lot as well with the reliance upon the internet to do a lot of the heavy lifting for us these days. Things like we don't have to remember as many facts as we used to because we've put that into our phones or on our computers. But when you write it down, you're actively thinking about it as you're writing it, and then you have that personal record of it, not just a Wikipedia entry that tells you about whatever the thing was that you were thinking about. It has your own personal perspective on there. I think that really does, even if it's just a ritual type thing, it really does have a way of cementing that and making it have more of a psychological significance in your life. I'm not a big journal keeper. I never have been. But I've used them before to write down funny things that I've thought about or observed, but not so much of my deepest thoughts and feelings about stuff. I just have never been that kind of guy.
All your experiences are washed away like tears in rain.
Well, it's probably for the best, you know. I mean, I destroy everything I touch, Joe. Yeah. And I don't want to look back at a wake of destruction. I just don't.
Well, I've seen attack ships on fire. I've seen, sea beams glittering off the Tannhauser Gate.
Nice little Blade Runner monologue there. I like how you totally lost it.
Yeah. Let me grab it here. I have sometimes kept journals on and off throughout my life. Not a whole lot recently, but there have been times when I did. And it definitely changes the way you live when you're keeping records of things. I mean, by writing down a memory, you take an experience and you make it knowledge. Like we were saying before, you imbue it with symbolic meaning just by putting it to words. You do the same thing by recording it, whether audio or video. But what about you, Lauren?
I actually kept diaries daily as a child. I mean, dozens and dozens of these diaries, and they were lost a few years ago when my father moved, and he was sending me, mailing me all of my possessions from my childhood. They were lost in the mail, and this is still this shattering thing to me because I was writing down all of these deeply personal things that I always thought that I would have a written record of, and suddenly I don't.
And what creep has them now?
I want that too.
I'll never tell.
But then for a long time I did have a live journal, and so that was kind of an extension of that. Not so much lately. I've kind of given up on it. It's mostly, I mean, sometimes I'll go back and look through my text messages to my friends if I want to see what was going on at a particular time. Or I'll scroll through Facebook and see what was going on.
Yeah, I've done that too.
When I go back and read my old, I had a live journal too. I didn't.
There's a lot of weeping.
Not a lot of weeping. I actually read it over and I think, I don't even remember being this person anymore. It's almost like
I was awesome.
There are times where I read things that I've written that were funny and I think, man, I was really funny back then.
Yeah.
What happened to me?
I do that all the time. I have zero recollection of writing these things. I mean, I remember feeling the way that I was feeling at the time, but the actual words that happened, I have no idea.
Yeah. No, yeah, I felt the same way. It's amazing to me to think of, though. I mean, if we were to make that more total, imagine you are really recording your whole life and not necessarily broadcasting it, but just for your own purposes. I just can't imagine really. I mean, how different would life be if you had a record of everything? Imagine you had something like Google Glass and you could just set it to record constantly. And so every conversation you had, everything you did, everything was available to you totally on recall. You just had to go back, rewind, and find it.
And even from the point, you know, but before you put on that Google Glass and you start recording, you know, I wonder what's going to happen with children who have been born in the past 5 years of digital photography, because, you know, I mean, I'm sure that all of us here have friends who have just 10 billion pictures of their very adorable, precious children on the internet. And, you know, what's it going to be like? You know, we all have a few tattered black and white photos, or maybe not black and white, but, you know, terrible chroma color from our childhoods. And these kids are going to have this second to second documentation.
I just have wood carvings, but, just imagine, let's project it out for a few years and just imagine that you are able to record pretty much your entire life and store it. I mean, it's not that hard to imagine.
It doesn't seem infeasible at all to me.
Yeah, you can just imagine taking your kids and saying, hey, I want to show you this. And you show your kids the moment that you and your spouse met and say, this is it. This is when we met one another and everything was magical. You could essentially,
why you exist. Yeah.
You could essentially recreate How I Met Your Mother, but, you know, in real life, and show them, like, this is why we got married.
Well, so many of the most important moments in our lives are totally unpredictable and spontaneous.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, don't have time to turn on a camera
exactly.
in order to share.
Or if you did turn on a camera, you would have missed out on what it was that was happening.
Right. It would have been weird if you're like, let me document this now. I mean, having just an ambient recording gives you the ability to experience life and not worry about trying to capture it, but knowing that if something happens that you want to remember, it will be available to you.
Which is a big criticism of the kind of life blogging or life capture that's happening right now. And that, you know, I mean, how many times have you gone to a concert and you see more people watching it through their cell phone than actually watching the stage?
I hate it.
And it kills you a little bit inside. You go, like, you're missing the experience.
That's also one of the reasons why Google was very interested in Google Glass, because they hoped that it would bring you that much closer to just experiencing what's going on around you in real time, while also capturing everything from your point of view. But you don't have to worry about it because it's just doing it on its own.
Well,
once you tell it to record, it's not like it's always recording, although that is a fear some people have.
I think there is an interesting psychological distinction between having an experience and making memories of that experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're two different modes you get into, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
But this sort of consolidates them, right?
Yeah, and I tell you, let me tell you what I'm most looking forward to in the future with this kind of technology. What I'm most looking forward to is the fact that when my wife tells me I said something, and I know I didn't say that, but she tells me I said that, we can actually go back and look
and
at the
learn
record.
That you were wrong.
I am never wrong. I am never wrong. And the video will prove it once we have that technology. She remembers things that happened in an alternate universe.
You seem so sure of yourself.
I am 100% positive.
Well, so we'll I can't out. Wait to see how this pans out.
Yeah, I can't wait either. Well, guys, I think this wraps up our conversation about life casting. If you have any suggestions for topics that we should cover here on Forward Thinking, please get in touch with us. Let us know what you think. Tell us what excites you about the future. What is it that you really want to hear us talk about? We can, you can get in touch with us using our email. We have fwthinking@discovery.com. That works to get to all three of us. You can also get in touch with us by going to fwthinking.com. Check out the website. Go watch the videos. Read up on the blog posts. Our social media links are there. You can get in touch with us on Facebook or Twitter or Google+. We're eager to hear from you. We can't wait for you to be part of the conversation, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.